Welcome to episode 6 of The Iron Agenda, the podcast about War Machine, hordes, and whatever else is on our minds. Hey everybody, and welcome to The Iron Agenda, the podcast your mama warned you about. I'm Josh.
I'm Dave.
I'm Pat.
And I'm James.
And that's not just James, that's War Chief James, or War Chief Aslan Kyog.
I can't believe you would give somebody grief about a forum name that's hard to pronounce.
I'm not giving them grief. I just actually can't pronounce it.
Oh, okay. Well, that's okay then.
So you earned that title how, James?
I took Best of Trolls in the Summer Rampage League.
And that's worldwide, correct? Worldwide.
Hey, congratulations.
Yeah. Nice job.
So we had two of the faction champs here in St. Louis.
That's right.
We tracked all the big deals around here.
Yeah.
Mahogany and all that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, totally.
Insert Anchorman jokes here. All right. On to the podcast.
All right. Well, tell us about yourself, James.
Oh, I'm a St. Louis War Machine Hordes player. I play quite a few of the factions.
Well, we were looking at your list earlier. It seems like you play every faction. How many points did you decide you own?
I own 26,239 points if you add everything together.
Is there a little bit? There's still a little bit of overlap there, right?
There's a little bit of overlap if you do the individual ones, but the total one is supposed to be everything separate.
Wow. That's a whole lot of points.
That is a lot of points.
Yeah, I'm nowhere near that.
Yeah, I got a little bit of
That's slightly emasculating.
Did you say you have a little bit of a problem?
A little bit.
I'm James, and I'm a Figmentia-holic. Is that what you call it?
Pretty much. Yeah, Figmentia is what I usually call it. It kind of just crew.
Now, how much of that is painted?
Very little.
Very little.
Hey, join the club. Power the Unpainted.
You said you were working on 1,000 points, though, for War Machine Weekend coming up. Is that right?
Yes, I'm working on getting a 1,000-point Protectorate Army together for the event at War Machine Weekend, the 1,000-point tournament. Tom, Testament of Minoth, and Krios, and their countrymates, basically.
Wow.
It's a goal. Don't know if I'll make it, but I'm trying.
Yeah, that's just right around the corner, honestly. You know, that it... It seems like it's a ways off, but really, it's just really creeping up on us.
Less than 3 weeks, right?
Yeah.
Guys, I should actually pre-register, shouldn't I?
Yeah, I need to do that.
I'm still debating whether I'm going to or not, because if I'm only going to play 3 events, that's less than the pre-registration.
You know, that's a good – I need to look at that and see, too, because I'm going to be down there. I'm going to – I plan on being there every day, but I'm not going to play every event, obviously. Yeah. So I need to look at it and see, because you may be right. If it's just is it $10 per event?
$7 per event. So if you play 5 events, then you should pre-register.
Probably just going to pre-register because it's easier.
I'm thinking of doing it, and also just to throw a little few extra. This is only a few extra dollars to the store if they host it every year. You know,
sure.
How much is the pre-registration?
$30, I think, Dave.
$30 if you do it soon.
Well, it's $30 until the day of. So you can do it until like October 16th.
Oh, really?
But you have to have a money order, I think. No personal checks or PayPal. I think PayPal.
No, you can call the store and actually pay by credit card.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay,
oh, well, perfect. Well, I'll do that then.
That's what I did.
Yeah, I think if it's just 30, yeah, like you said, I'll pre-register then. Even if I play 2 events, but still, sure. You know, to support the local game store, that's the way to go.
So we'll talk about War Machine Weekend a little bit later, I guess, in a different episode. But
While we're down there,
yeah.
I don't know if I told both of you guys about this, but there's another role playing podcast down the area.
Earthworm.
It's actually a podcast out of metagames.
And Bear Swarm?
Bear Swarm, yeah. And I've talked to a couple of them on the forums, and we're probably going to hang out with them one night and drink some beer, who knows.
Sure.
But get to hang out and see some other podcasters, too.
Sounds like a plan.
Yep. Sounds, yeah, good deal.
All right, well, what's our first topic today, Dave?
Our first topic is faction loyalty.
And like we talked about with James, there's plenty of that over in this corner of the room.
Yeah, or lack thereof,
yeah,
I should
say.
That's
how you look at it, I guess.
Well, he has a lot of loyalty just to all the factions.
Sure. As long as they don't know about each other, it's all good.
Well, there are main factions I consider are the ones I play, the go-to factions. Mm-hmm. Technically, I can run any of the 9 factions, counting Mercs.
Debatable.
With Hordes, Trollbloods are my main faction. I've got more of them than anything else, and they're usually my go-to faction for Hordes when I decide that's the style I want to play. For War Machine, Protectorate of Minoth is my main faction, with Crix a close second and Mercs a close third, I guess.
Yeah. Keeping in mind that we really don't know anything about the Retribution except, you know, Eris. Are you going to pick them up?
I won't say that I won't, because I tend to have a little bit of everything. Like I said, at this point, I can run 1,000 points of anything, except your dwarves.
Oh, that's right. Seer Forge, yeah.
So I'm thinking about it. I'll probably wait and see the rules on them, see what the models look like.
Does that play into your collection, what the models look like?
It started out with playing Krix. Picked that up when I very first got in the game because of the look of the models. And I started playing around, and then I got into an Escalation League that didn't have a Protectorate player. So I wound up picking up some Protectorate models and borrowing a lot during that time and found out I really liked the way they played.
Mm-hmm. That's because they're the better faction.
For sometimes.
Patch is shaking his head.
I'm not even going to grace it with a comment.
And then it grew into, I had Mercs for both of those, and then Mercs, you got Magnus, and you start building from there, and then all of a sudden Mercs are a faction. And then we started getting Frankenstein events in St. Louis, so I picked up a few things here and there.
We should explain what that is for our listeners.
Yeah, some groups play them, but yeah, I don't know how widespread the Frankenstein idea is.
Basically, a Frankenstein event is 666 points where anything goes, but everything's a character. You can have any warcaster you want and any model from any faction, but everything's character. You can only have one Death Ripper, one Night Wretch, one of anything.
The same thing for units as well.
Exactly.
On top of that, all references to any faction apply to basically the whole army.
Right.
And instead of having Focus and Fury, because your warlocks and war casters can actually control both.
Right.
What do we call it? Furcus?
I think so.
Furcus? Whatever. Basically, you can leech up to your Focus or Fury stat from war beasts, and then you automatically generate the rest.
Exactly.
And then you can allocate to war jacks if you have any.
Right.
Well, okay. Again, I understand you're combining the Fury and the Focus. So you're leeching Fury?
I'll give an example.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Say you're running Siege and you've got a Winter Troll and a Hunter and some other stuff.
Uh-huh.
Your Winter Troll is full. He's got three Fury on him. So at the start of your control phase, Siege leeches that three Fury off the Winter Troll and they become his first three Focus.
Okay.
And then he has no more to leech, so he generates the remaining three to go up to six.
Okay, so he gets to six.
At which point he can allocate to his Warjacks as he sees fit.
Okay, thanks. That makes sense. I understand now.
Yeah, it's not really straightforward. You kind of have to almost play it once to really see it in play, but it's a fun little diversion.
It's not meant to be balanced or anything either.
Oh, yeah, absolutely not.
It's meant to see what kind of over-the-top trick you can come up with. Like then the last one, I had recyclable cavalry. I had Testament of Menoth. I had a fell collar to make all my cavalry fearless, and then I had the wolf riders.
I want to mention this too, to make your wolf riders fearless because they don't have formation. You kept one in the back right next to the fell collar while the rest of them ran around the field wherever they wanted to go.
Pretty much,
well,
yes.
That's how they operate anyway, yeah. Typically.
Well, no, but you can keep it next to something that makes them fearless.
Well, sure.
That's just
funny. That's pretty funny and nasty.
It was fun, but... And it was a case where you were getting enough, you were bringing something back, and I had a Scarlock in the list, so the Scarlock could pull off a three-focus spell, which was Revive. So every turn, I got two things back. With most of them being Cav out there, you've got two Cav models coming back a turn.
Wow.
And so this Frankenstein event is what started you picking up some of the other factions you didn't already have?
Right. I started picking up, like, Junior for Signar, and the Widowmakers for Cawdor, and a few things here and there, and then I'm the type that if I've got it, I want to play it here and there. So then I pick up a Warcaster for each. And then it went from there. And it goes downhill.
I hate to ask, but do you know what the monetary value of your collection is?
I prefer not to think about it.
Yeah, I wouldn't look into that either.
I have been good about – I picked up several collections of people getting out of the game here and there. And a couple of eBay collections that were very discounted.
Mm-hmm.
Things like that.
Ooh, that's actually probably, if you're going to pick up a second or third faction, that's probably not a bad way to do it. You know, because it's pretty expensive to try and pick up.
I've seen some pretty
once.
There's some pretty good deals on our local forums too. You know, in the trade section, every once in a while you'll come across a pretty good gem here and there. So,
So that's kind of led you to branch out to other factions, I guess. For those of us that haven't done so, I mean, like Pat, what's kept you in with just plain Signar?
Well, I've mentioned it before.
We'll mention it again, damn it.
Sure. Okay, then. Well, it's sort of along the lines of what James mentioned there, and the fact that it's an expensive hobby, and it seems to get more expensive as times go by because the price of the metal has gone up, so models are more expensive now than before, whatever. So that is one thing. The other big thing is I don't want to have to paint any more than I already have to paint. And I do want to paint my models. It's just that I'm a very slow painter and it's going to take me years to do it. So if I get another faction, there's more crap I've got to paint. And that's one of the primary reasons I haven't picked up a Hordes faction.
If you were able to, and I'm not saying there's one out there right now, if you were able to buy a significant sized Hordes army that was already painted for cheap, would you do it?
You know, that's a good question. And it depends on the paint job, maybe. But I there's something about me that I like to paint my own. I like to paint my own stuff, I mm-hmm. guess, even though it's going to be slow or whatever. I think it's just a sort of a pride in doing it yourself.
I'm the same way. That's one of the things that's kind of kept me from branching out is I'm a slow painter as it is, and there's no way I could keep up with a second faction.
Yeah.
I actually thought about and still am thinking about picking up the Retribution when they come out, depending if I like the models and if I like the fluff and if I like the rules. But now that I'm editing a podcast every week on top of some other stuff, I seriously don't have the time. I think I've been working on Epic Severius for about 3 weeks now.
Yeah. I mean, that's other part of it is the time factor for me too is, I've got a 2-year-old and that takes a lot of time. So,
well, you need to get that kid to work.
That's right. Here, start assembling and start painting.
That's right. So, be good for something.
There's a lot of reasons for it, but that's prime. That's the big thing. And also, I think picking up the Hordes faction would mean, diving in, learning about the Hordes and everything too. So, and as it is, I certainly don't have everything memorized for just War Machine. I'm always looking back at the rules and referring to the cards because I just don't have it memorized because I'm just not that smart.
So two of the biggest hurdles we've listed so far, basically the monetary investment and the time invested in the painting.
Mm-hmm.
And then of course the flip side of that, the motivation to do so as well, you can play other stuff because every faction has cool stuff. Right. There's no denying that. I'm not playing the Protectorate and Legion because they're the only factions that have stuff that's good. I mean, they're not by far. They're just fun. They fit my playstyle.
Along those lines, at least, we've got enough, mercenary options that at least we can play stuff that is other than just strictly faction specific. So like I pick up almost every, mercenary that will work for Signar so that I can at least play that. So that gives me a little bit of a feel, like you say, it's not completely over the.
Well, for the longest time, my Signar, I kept calling it Signarish because mm-hmm. it was really just Kane, a few little Signar models, and then all the mercs that would work for Signar.
Yeah.
And I actually won a tournament that way.
You did that had like Kadorish, and you won a tournament with Circle-ish too, didn't you?
No, it was actual Circle. I did have the Bog Trogs and the Gatormen in that army, I think. At the very least, the Gatormen. Mm-hmm. But still, it was mostly Circle.
Okay.
Well, I think that tournament you won, at least one of them was against me.
I think so.
I can't remember who I took. It may have been Denegra. But Kane eventually wiped me out.
I'm gonna say this because AK probably won't. That tournament that he won with Circle was the first, second, third, and fourth games he played with Circle.
Oh, that's right.
Oh, wow.
And I went up against some very. I did not expect to do as well as I did.
Yeah, I mean, you got some really lucky rolls, but you're no slouch at playing either.
And also the Circle players I went up against because I think three of my four games were against other Circle players.
Wow,
they all really. Overextended, I think, because they didn't expect me to be able to take advantage of some things.
Mm-hmm.
So they were right where they didn't need to be, and then I did get some really good rolls.
The great thing about War Machine, it can go either way pretty much at any
Absolutely.
Time.
Yeah, you really got to think about everything.
That's funny you mentioned, you went up against several more Circle caster or players. Talking about faction loyalty as a whole across the community, there's been this big shift from time to time. There was at one point was maybe two Circle players in the entire community,
right.
And then all of a sudden everybody was playing Circle.
Yep. And
every day I went into the game, so what, you're picking up Circle? And then I think that happened with a couple other factions, but I distinctly remember it happening with Circle.
It's heading towards Signar right now. I think Kray and a lot of the new yeah. Jacks and then like the young yeah. mages, I think they're encouraging some people to pick mm-hmm. up
yeah
Signar.
I was gonna say that. I've been kind of surprised to see that because since I've been playing this game, it always seemed like, Signar, the people that were playing Signar, we were sort of very, sort of few. And then all of a sudden, like you said, people, I've noticed that over the last year or so, a lot more people are picking up Signar.
Especially as their second or third
yeah,
faction.
I still haven't seen a rush towards a Protector yet, which doesn't surprise me because they don't have I can pick up this army and win with it.
There's too much. There's too many things that connect together that you have to know. Mm-hmm. And if you get out of order, it doesn't always work well.
Yeah. So, back when they used to have faction awards, that didn't bother me because, that just meant less competition for a faction coin. But now that it doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
I think actually that's another reason, too, is now that you don't have to try and play a faction to get a faction coin. you see a lot more migration towards the top factions.
I kind of like that because I used to go to, I'd bring both two or three armies to a tournament saying, okay, what am I going to play today, you know, to maximize my chances. I hated thinking of it that way, but, you know, who doesn't want a coin? But nowadays, it's like you play whatever you want.
Yeah, there were several events that I literally, still do that. I took four or five.
Locally, mm-hmm. if we have a mix event, I'm still going to take both armies and decide there what I'm going to play, mm-hmm. you know, based on, you know, who shows up and the faction mixes. And yeah, it's not going to affect a chance to get a coin, but I'll still fill in the gap just to have something different on the table.
Sure. Yeah, because you don't want to be facing 15 Legion players and one Troll and one Circle player. Mm-hmm. I mean, and for a while there, we were really heavy in Legion players.
Yeah.
You'd go to an event and we'd have a good third of the people were playing Legion.
Pat, you look upset.
Did you zone out, Pat?
No, I didn't. I was just, you know, like you're saying, you're talking about all the Legion players. And I know we've looked at, some Legion lists and they're just nasty. So I can... just the thought of, like you said, facing down 8 to 12 people all playing Legion list is just wow.
Especially as a Troll player, with all your casters on medium bases, and they may only take one Angelus most of the time, but your average Legion player is throwing two of those things down there, and that gets difficult.
Well, we've kind of talked about why you jump into other factions, but I'm curious what your guys' thoughts are on how multi-factioning affects your gameplay, affects your knowledge of the other factions and that kind of stuff.
In all honesty, when I started doing it and getting all those other factions that I was playing, to me, it actually has helped me because there were a lot of things in other factions that I couldn't figure out how to get around. But then you start taking them, you play them from the other side of the field, you see a lot easier how you can take those factions down, how that combo, if you take this one key piece out, it falls apart. Mm-hmm. You learn a lot on know thy enemy kind of thing. I think it's made me a much better protectorate player, knowing how to get around a lot of the different things, knowing what to put in my list to average them out to face everything, because I've got something over here to deal with this, something over here to deal with that kind of thing.
I think you're right. I think that will give you a certain advantage, just like you said, in knowing all the other pieces out there. And again, that's something like for me, since I only have Signar and that's it, I certainly, that's a downfall for me because I don't know three and a half other factions, I guess, for War Machine. Let's put it that way. Other than just sort of what I've seen, a little bit of what I've read or whatever else. Cause again, I'm just not going to sit down and read through the books and memorize everything. And I'm also not playing on the other side of the table, like you say. Right. So I think it'd be a great advantage to do that if you're able to. Like you said, if you're able to, I think it's a good thing to do. But, you know, like me, I just really am not.
I think when I picked up Circle, it wasn't necessarily a bad choice, but there's some commonality between Circle and Crix in the way they play, heavy magic use and some other things. And so that overlap sort of hindered me a little bit in terms of, what you're talking about, James, knowing your enemy. But still, even playing Circle gave me a big insight, not only into Hordes, how to play against Hordes, because that was the Hordes faction that I picked up, but just in general, how to play Crix. It was neat to look back on Crix and say, well, how would I do this in Circle, and what are the differences? What are the comparisons, and how would that affect my play?
Now, for that time before you forsook the Trolls when you were playing the Troll Bloods.
That's right. I forgot. Though. It doesn't even register in my mind that I used to play Trolls. I forsook them.
Because that's a completely different play style than Crix.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, I remember not liking the Trolls very much, probably because I was so in tune to Crix and I liked Crix so much.
I enjoyed the Trolls because they have some of the aspects of the Protectorate where things synergize and work well together.
The Trolls are the Protectorate of Kador.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, pretty close. They've got that whole beat face thing that really you can't do as well with Protectorate.
Yeah.
So I enjoyed that aspect of being able to do something that I was familiar with and have that other aspect on top of it.
I think a lot of people would agree with this, or at least it seems to me. The Hordes factions seem to be blends of the War Machine factions, or at least it's difficult to look at them in any other way since War Machine came first. You know what I mean?
Right. I was going to add on top of that, but yeah, you kind of clarified what I was going to say is basically because we have the War Machine factions to base our observations on.
Exactly.
We can see aspects of
them. But it's not like a one to one. It's more like like they took the circle and they turned it like half a half a turn. So you've got it's a little bit of this, a little bit of that. So you can't say that Trolls are the Signar, but because it's not, well, it's sort of a little this and that, because I've had that explained to me by a couple people. That's why I thought I'd mention that.
But what I was going to say is I'm kind of the opposite way that you are, uh-huh. Josh, in that I enjoy the Legion mostly because they are so different from the Protectorate.
Yeah.
I mean, let's face it, the slow, unkillable guys and the quick glass cannons, they don't play a whole lot alike.
No, no.
But, you know, I have fun with both of them, just from a different standpoint. I'm not 100% certain that playing other factions would really give me that much of an edge. I think that playing the Protector and seeing some of the most complicated combinations of units and stuff, it's a little bit easier to figure out some of the other factions when you see them on the table. But I think that's just a benefit of the faction I play primarily, not so much just a disagreement in what you said.
Sure. Well, we play so many people around here anyway. It's difficult not to be familiar with some of the other factions anyway.
I mean, we had, what, 70 people in that one league?
We had in the 60s, and 64, I think, was the highest league total we had.
Okay.
So. But by the time this episode drops, our most recent season will have started, and I don't know, we'll see how many we have then, too.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see.
Especially since we're kind of juggling days and stuff, but we'll see.
Yeah.
Sure. And, you know, when I picked up Signar, that was the other thing I was going to say. Signar plays very differently, I think, from the Crixon Circle. So that gave me a little bit of extra fun to have. I got to see something else. And again, that lets me see the big differences. So.
Well, you mentioned that, but you also bought a really good deal on Cawdor years ago when someone was getting rid of it.
It was over $1,000 worth of it. Yeah, I didn't. I played it a few times, and I think if I had kept up with it, I would have liked it a little more. And looking back, I remember playing a lot of Jacks in those armies.
Yeah.
And that, I hate to say it, but that may have been the thing that drove me away from it.
I can see that. So you think that maybe in your gaming War Machine career, you just weren't at a point where you wanted to take on another faction at the time?
I think that was a big part of it. I bought it for less than half price, and that was a huge, you know, impetus to buy it in the first place.
Including a transport and bag.
Yeah, it had a whole bunch of extra stuff, and it was a fantastic deal, and people around here got their own fantastic deals when I got rid of it.
Me too, because I got a big chunk of it, I think.
Oh, you did? Yeah. It could have been. I know I traded a huge chunk to several people.
Because that was the one that was painted really funny, wasn't it?
It was red.
Well, red, but it was kind of blotchy.
It wasn't the cleanest paint job.
Yeah, it was pretty quick and dirty.
Because I'm thinking that was the one I threw in the dip right away.
Could have been. Could have been.
Yeah, actually, I was just sitting here thinking about this. If I were to try another faction, I think I would want to try a faction that was more magic heavy. And by that, I mean, I don't look at Signar and the way I play Signar. I don't play it as very, you know, magic or certainly offensive magic heavy. Mm-hmm. So I play it more along the lines of, you know, with my troops and Jacks winning the fight for me, as opposed to going on an assassin run.
So. Well, who are your favorite Signar casters? I know you like Siege a lot.
I do like Siege. I like to play Kane. Those are the ones that have played the most. And again, I mean, both of them have the ways that they can do an assassin. Well, I think with Siege, you know, he blows his feet, but then it's the rest of his army that's really going to they're going to bring it home.
Well, like Kane, you said, obviously, neither one of those are heavy in magic, like you were saying.
Right. So. Well, yeah, I don't think any of the – well, no, I would – Haley might be. But again, we don't have some of the real – I think some of the other factions, especially Krix and I think even the Protectorate, have some really nasty offensive magic spells. They can get in. If you can get a node or whatever close enough, you can fire off your Stygian Abyss, and boom. You know, that's going to be like a game ender.
But you've also
Enemo can do it really well.
I'm going to say Enemo. I screwed up one time playing Legion with Thagrosh. I left myself with no fury because I thought I was well far enough back. Mm-hmm. He came up there, hit me with the Pulse Lightning spell one time. Dead. Gone.
Just one time hit. Was enough to do it. Yeah. And see that
I've only played D3 damage rolls. That's going
to
do it.
Yeah, I've only played Enemo once, and I need to play him some more. But yeah, I've heard that is definitely a way, because the other thing he can do is he can move. He's got the spell that allows him to move a little bit, so that he can even help him set up a charge lane,
right.
Which is something that you don't think of the old man being able to do. You don't play Enemo as a frontline caster from Prime, as you know, but
right.
Epic Enemo is a little bit different.
From playing Legion, I can tell you from using Slipstream all the time how handy that extra 2 or 3 inches can be.
Yeah, and something I'm not used to. I just, you know, I don't do that. So, again, back to the point is I think I would, if I were to pick up another faction or try something, I would maybe want to try, like, say, the Krix, just because they're so adept at the nasty assassination type stuff. And that's something that that's a form of play that I really don't. I don't do. I think you could do it with Signar. I just don't think that Signar is built to do it.
You know,
all the time, not effectively. It's you can do it a little bit, but it's not its forte.
You'd have to build your list around doing that more. I mean, you have a few magic casters and the lightning things to go with, but
yeah.
you'd have to build a list more around it. Whereas Crix, it's just you fall right into it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think Crix is a lot of people tell you Crix is difficult to pick up and learn how to use, but I think it's easy to not necessarily win with them, but it's easy to understand them, I think, in that if you want to, you can put 20 Bile Thralls out there in the Coven if you want, and people don't like those kind of lists, but sure. But if you just want to pick it up and try it, you can do some very simple, easy things that show you how Crix works in a nutshell. You know, it can show you the glass cannon, it can show the power of their magic, and it'll give you a good feel if you just wanted to try a few things.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and with Crix, the box set caster, Denegra, is just evil.
Yeah. I'd say she's one of the best casters in the game. Yep. People might disagree, but I love her.
I mean, you crippling grasp something and you take out a jack. That jack's next to useless unless they can get rid of it.
Which, nowadays, it's easier to do.
It's a lot easier to do. But
yeah.
Since we're talking about faction loyalty,
mm-hmm.
we kind of touched on it a little bit, but how many of you guys are actually thinking about or planning on picking up the Retribution?
Well, I think like James is saying, it's a wait and see what it is kind of thing. I mean, what we know, Eris and Myrmidons, but beyond that, I think it's still pretty vague.
So you'd say you're a maybe, not a no?
Well, yeah, I mean, sure. I'd have to wait and see.
You know I'm a maybe.
At worst.
It's pretty obvious. I'm probably definitely a no. I mean, I'll be interested to see what the faction is about. Again, there might be some new mercenary types that'll pop up with that would maybe work for Signar. That's what I would use. But as far as picking up another faction, no, I'm not really interested.
I'd probably wait and see what mercs that currently exist might work for them, and that would definitely heavily influence my decision.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of mercs are worded that this mercenary will work for X, and some of them are worded where this mercenary will not work for X.
Yep.
So either they did that in advance knowing there'd be another faction, or they're going to have to go back and reword everything anyway.
Yeah,
that's going to have to be a
I bet they're going to have to go back and rewrite or reword a lot of things.
I mean, I think that a couple-page PDF, a master mercenary list would be very handy, including here's what will work for the contracts. You know, here's what will work for the various factions. And, you know, keep it updated, update it once every couple months.
Sure.
Just so there's no confusion. And especially because I know, like, locally here, a year, maybe a couple of years ago, you know, someone ran a tournament with a Highborn list that ran Kel.
Right.
Kel doesn't work for the Highborn list. Exactly. No one caught it because... Well, let's face it, we trust a lot of the guys here because, most of the people are really not going to try and put a fast one on you.
Sure.
And on top of that, it's sometimes the mercenary contracts, they're the part of the game you're least familiar with.
Right.
Like, I couldn't tell you off the top of my head who worked for what mercenary contract.
I could only tell you a handful only because I've used them before.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
A little bit ago, we were talking about how you're picking up factions, additional factions online for cheap.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of us also try and buy stuff from the local game stores, never get a chance to try and support them.
Right.
I mean, I don't know how to put this, but how do you feel about buying a bunch of stuff, like dropping a couple $100 online as opposed to not feeding the local game store? And I'm not trying to criticize because, I've done it before myself. The only reason I don't do it now is because I have a lot of the old stuff I want and I keep, I just keep up to date with the local game store, which, James, I know you do too,
right,
with your factions. But like, if you were to branch out, you would probably go somewhere else to pick up a bunch of old stuff.
My rule of thumb is I get all my advance orders and new releases from the gaming store. And that's for the factions that I'm actively playing. Now, some of my factions I let slide because I've obviously got all of them. But the main ones, the Trolls, the Crix, and the Protectorate, and usually Merc, those I will get from the gaming store just right off the bat. And those are the ones I always do. If I find something for cheap that I just want to branch out, something old, I have no problem picking that up offline. Because I do know that I'm constantly buying something from the gaming store, doing my best to help support them. But if I get a good deal from somewhere on something that's been out for even 6 months.
Maybe something you wouldn't have picked up otherwise.
Exactly. Very much so. Especially that's how most of my Signar has come about. I wouldn't have bought most of it brand new right off the bat because it just isn't my main faction. It's not my forte. The models were okay, aren't the ones that just click with me right away. But when you get a good deal on the Storm Lances and Darius, you're going to take it.
I'm at a point with most of my armies, even Signar, which is my newest army, that I don't need to go buy anything that's already released, any of the older stuff, the staple units and whatnot. So that, keeping that in mind, knowing that I'm probably not going to have to make a huge purchase for any particular army, I'll buy the new releases and whatnot. If I were to buy the new releases at a store that I frequent, if I were going to branch out with a new army, say, let's say I wanted to pick up Kator again, I probably would buy the bulk of it cheap online or whatever. But I would still buy little nuts and bolts, little pieces here and there, especially new releases from the LGS, the local game store.
And most of the times when you get the ones online, you don't really get a best optimized armor, exactly sure. what you want to play. So you're going to you're gonna have to fill in the gaps.
Yeah, you might get 50% off, but you only want 50% of that army that you just bought anyway.
Right, exactly.
Mm. Yeah, I could see that.
And you know, a lot of times, and I don't know how other stores are, some of the stores locally will take trades. So let's say you bought something on eBay. You might be able to get more out of it than you purchased anyway by trading into the store and getting something else. Depends what state it's in, whether it's in a blister or whatever. Mm-hmm. But there's still that opportunity, I think.
Well, it's true. I mean, and you know, even if – I don't know if this is the case, but say you were one – you got this real itch to buy like an entire faction like all at once. Who knows? Maybe one of the local game stores might cut you a deal. Say, hey, I want to buy, you know, basically the equivalent of $1,000 worth of product from you. Like right now, can we make a little deal? Can I get, you know, whatever, 10% awesome. Off or something like that? I don't know.
I mean, if you're going to do something like that, for one thing, you know, the store owner is going to get your money he wouldn't get otherwise. And on top of that, he doesn't have to stock it. Or if he does have it stocked, he can get rid of it. Mm-hmm. I mean,
right. It was just,
order, you know, I mean, so that, cause I am all for support. You know, if you got a good store, you want to support it. But on the flip side, I'm just like a normal guy. I'm looking to,
so many dollars.
I've got a budget and I need to shop smart.
Yeah.
Shop as smart. So, you know, you're going to look for that. But again, it never hurts to ask, I guess, to say, you know, right. go up to the guys and say, hey, can we work something out? Cause I want to buy a bunch. You know, I would love for you to have the money as opposed to some guy in Hoboken, whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, actually before Gen Con, I mean, Gen Con's kind of weird. It's like another store, but they don't discount, you know?
Right. Yeah.
And I swung by Game On the day before Gen Con and picked up Epic Lilith. On one hand, so I could have her assembled to go up there and play some friendly games with, which I wound up not doing, but that's beside the point. But I, you know, I went ahead and bought it from Game On instead of buying it from Gen Con.
Well, I had you pick up my Ikai at that time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And even though I knew I could have ninja shopped half the stuff that was coming out later in the month, it's only going to be a couple of more weeks, I just had a few things picked up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like the Kilt Lifter, which I actually didn't get, but still.
Oh, did they run out by the time your ninja shopper could get there?
Yeah, actually, I was James's ninja shopper, and I got there late day Thursday.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it took us a long time to drive out there because I was sick.
You're throwing up everywhere.
Oh, dude.
Yeah.
Dave's DNA is littering the highway.
I went to go to Luke's house to pick him up. Actually, he was going to drive, but we were taking my car. So I drove out there, and I pulled over occasionally. I had some stomach flu or something. Did my business, picked him up. Busted out my travel case, brushed my teeth and everything in his house, repacked it, and we got back on the highway, and we had to stop again a couple times.
That sucks, man.
Now, by the time we got there, I was fine.
Yeah.
I mean, it had cleared out of my system.
Yeah, but curiously, the next day, I felt pretty bad.
Yeah.
Well, so I wonder.
Well, that's going to happen. Me. Yeah, man, I'll tell you.
But yeah, I got out there Thursday afternoon, a few hours before the show floor closed, and they were already out of Kilt Lifters.
Mm-hmm.
And I did walk through the line and pick up 4 copies of Legends because I had ninja shot that for a couple people locally, and later they put a limit on it.
Yeah, but I got my 3, but yeah.
That, you know, that brings up an interesting question that you sort of mentioned there on the topic of, say, ninja shopping, getting things early. Like for me personally, I had – the only thing I had ninja shopped from you guys at Gen Con was Legends.
Yeah, I wanted to go ahead and get
that.
Yeah.
Right. Definitely I wanted that. But I had no interest in buying the other models because, one, you're going to pay full price, you know, the expensive – price and the premium even there, and these are models that are going to be coming out in a few weeks, maybe another one in a month or so. Personally, I just don't need them right away. I'll wait till they come out. I'll wait till I can either, you know, get them from the local game store. But what about you guys? Go around like around the table. What do you guys just have to have things like right now, or what do you think? I don't. So I'll wait.
I don't either. And the way I look at it is, you know, I've got a painting backlog anyway. I can't field the model as soon as it comes out. So, you know, it has to be released locally before I can use it in an event. I mean, sure, I could do friendly play, but I have plenty of other models to play friendly games with too. And if I really want to and it's a friendly game, I'll proxy it anyway. But like I passed on the Fire of Salvation when it was up there. It means I didn't spend an extra $8. But, you know, I did pick it up locally and it's up there, you know, getting painted. It'd be in that same condition if I picked it up at Gen Con. You know, I'm not really worried about it. I did buy Epic Sevi, so I get a head start on him because he was a complicated model and he was going to take some work. And I picked up Epic Iris because I had to saw off her base. And now I'm waiting to – actually, I don't want to talk about online what I'm going to mount her on yet. but I'm working on her too. But yeah, I mean, a lot of the other stuff I didn't pick up just because I'd rather give Walker my money.
Yeah. I picked up a few things on the off chance that I was going to use them at Gen Con. Like, I used Epic Gorshade's card. I proxied them. But, you know,
sure.
Of course, I could have used the book, but, you know, whatever.
Oh, I'm sorry. I don't want to go back a minute. The book is, I think, a different beast. Beast. Yes, thank sure. you. Because it's immediately useful to me. It's a good read. I want to see what stuff does so my head can start spinning. And, frankly, since everyone's going to be talking about it online anyway, I'd like to actually have the whole idea of what a model does, not just trying to go from the speculation and
yeah. Because there's and always something online. Wrong about it.
Exactly. And mm-hmm. so I don't want to get my hopes up based on something and find out it's wrong.
Sure.
The book is a different beast, and the book I did pick up early as well, mm-hmm. even and though it was going to come out shortly thereafter locally. You know, I did wind up getting that.
Mm-hmm. Some things like the White Mane, for example, the mm-hmm. new solo for Circle, they're FA2. So I bought one at Gen Con knowing I'd buy a second one later. So I wanted to get my hands on it, look at the model, because that's another thing that you can't do by waiting. You can actually see the physical model, even if you don't put it together. That appeals to some people, seeing the actual physical thing.
And having it in your hands is different than looking at it in Legends.
Oh, the absolutely.
Book, sure. Well, Metamorphosis.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Or online or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it is a lot different.
Yeah. So mm-hmm. I bought one of those knowing I'd buy a second one later. And but I didn't even use them. I did buy the Cankerworm, though, because for some reason I thought just having that jack. I actually wanted to proxy it with a Gorshade. I don't know if I did that night or not. But either way, the Cankerworm I knew I was going to get. So I wanted to get that guy as soon as I could because I did want to look at that model. I wasn't sure. There were some things about the pictures that I had seen that I wasn't too sure about, and I wanted to get that physical thing. So still, I really didn't buy too much. Could have bought old Rowdy, I guess, but he'd like your Fire of Salvation. Mine would still be sitting in the blister, I'm sure. So.
You're right. The book's a different beast. Every year they come out with a new book.
Yep.
The book's a given. I'm going to get someone to ninja shop the book for me because it's right there. You can go through the whole thing. With me being into all the different factions too, I sit there and I read everything, go through it and get a good idea. Do I even want to buy this? Is this something I want to pick up now? Is this something that's going to go into the if I find it cheap later on pile?
It's a good shopping list.
Yeah.
I mean, you can determine what you want to get and what you don't.
Absolutely.
Now, in previous years, when we had a little bit of advance notice with, like, the Cav was coming out and it wasn't going to be out for weeks or months even, mm-hmm. I had some Cav picked up the first year with Avengers, but it was just Avengers. And then I think last year I had the Buffaloes picked up. But both those years, yeah, I had a local gaming store I was playing at, but it also wasn't as necessarily as friendly as like we have with Walker right now.
Yeah. Well, it seems like the release schedule is getting so compressed. They're running out of models, it seems like. And so you don't have to wait as long whenever something is announced. That's my general feeling, at least.
Yeah, I noticed that they're already almost at the end of Legends. Mm-hmm. There's not much to release. I mean, granted, that's because we know that Metamorphosis is coming out here very shortly.
Right.
And then there will likely be another book in next August. We don't know what that is.
Right.
Going to, one way or another, have the new faction, we know, but that's all.
Well, I'm just thinking of the Crix Legend stuff. I mean, one of the two, Nightmare, the Ghost Raiders, all the Trolls and Gerlach. It's at least four things. That's 4 months, maybe less than 4 months worth of releases.
Okay.
Next topic.
Last episode, we talked a lot about underused and underrated Warlocks and Warcasters. And now since we have the Warchief with us, James, you're a Warlock fan now that you can field the right tools with him,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So why don't you tell us a little bit about this list you brought us on kind of how to use Warlock effectively.
All right. Well, Horlock's still not the easiest troll to use, given that. But like Mike with Amon-Ra-Za, if you know how to work and work, you can actually get something out of him. The biggest problem with Horlock is he's really not for small point games. Because to make him work effectively, because his defense and his armor is so low, and on that medium base, you have to overcome that. So what I typically do on a list when I'm designing it around Horlock is the first things you include is you include an Earthborn and a Bouncer. The Bouncer, you get basically it gives cover to a model behind it. So instead of just giving the normal +2 for screening, he gets +4.
But he still has to benefit from screening in the first place,
exactly.
Right?
So anything that ignores screening does get rid of that. So even against Legion, you get that benefit. Sure. So if they try and hit you with the Seraph Spam Strafe, you've got a good chance of actually defeating it because you're up at a defense 17 instead of a 13.
Mm-hmm.
It's a whole lot better.
Mm.
Also, with the Earthborn, you're going to be throwing Metamorphosis on Doomshaper every turn.
Now, is that something the Earthborn would do, or is that a self?
He can cast it on himself, or the Earthborn can cast it on him. It can be either or. It depends on the situation. If I've got my Earthborn chugging up forward, getting ready to set up something, he'll cast it on himself. Mm-hmm. If I've got my Earthborn sitting back closer to him where I can see him, I'll have the Earthborn do it, because the Earthborns, you're going to want some Fury on it anyway.
Sure.
But again, with the bouncer and base-to-base contact, you're giving Horlock a 23 armor, assuming that the Creel Stone's in effect, which you're going to want to have at least a minimum Creel Stone unit with him.
So how many points is that right there with that little core?
If you have that little core, assuming a minimum Creel Stone unit, you're already up to 283 points. Just with that core of what you really need to keep him from getting killed.
Is that what you meant when you said he's only for higher point games?
Exactly.
That's more than half your 500 list.
You don't think you could put just like champions and a fell caller in and play it at 500?
You can, but it's not nearly as effective. You don't have all the tools you want. You're a lot more one-sided. You can't really branch out and cover all your
bases. That's a lot of points.
It'd be easily
defense.
Flankable too, I'd think.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. Because it's also, there's not many models in that 283 points. You've got the two beasts, Doom Shaper, and four models from the Creel Stone. That's easy to get around, easy to maneuver around, and you're going to have problems. The list I've got together here also includes the Axer as a fallback. You've got the Animus for the extra distance on your charge.
Or getting over rough terrain, which is huge.
Exactly, getting over rough terrain. And you also have the fact that if something happens to the bouncer, or you need the bouncer to go after something with his reach that ignores shields, that you've also got the Axer to stay back with Horlock, so you've got at least a 22 armor. So you can swap them back and forth if necessary. Doesn't give the plus to defense, but it's still it's an option to have. And also, you're not relying on one beast not getting killed. In the list, I've got a Fellcaller with a horde, with a troll list. I mean, why wouldn't you want a Fellcaller? There's too many uses for his plus two to hit. Open road, Reveille.
Is there a generic place for his positioning in this list?
As I go down, I'm going to bring in that I'm going to have the Scattergunners in this list. Because with Horlock and Fortune being able to reroll, you want him somewhere where he can get to the Scattergunners with his Fell Calls.
Okay.
Usually the Scattergunners for me will run up one of the two flanks. Because they're already low armor, they're not going to get much benefit out of the Creel Stone, really. I mean, plus two helps, don't get me wrong, but...
Really mostly helps against AoEs.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. It helps against AoEs more than anything. So they tend to run more on the flanks. I'm not trying to keep them in the Creel Stone or the Fellcaller's in between them and the rest of my army, so he can bounce back and forth as need be. Because with Fortune and the plus two to hit, that makes those Scattergunners with those sprays evil.
Oh, sure.
In this list, I've only got six Scattergunners, mainly because I'm wanting to take Pendrake in the list. Normally, I tend to run 7 to 9 Scattergunners, but I've been doing a lot of theory machining with Pendrake. I have not had a chance to use him yet, and the plus die against Beast is just going to be nasty in some of these troll builds.
I want to, on top of that, this is specifically from a steamroller standpoint, but trolls are all medium bases, and with only 6 guys, it's easier for you to fit them all in a scoring area, for example, a mosh pit or a ridgeline. I mean, yeah, 10, 9 Scattergunners would be handy, but that's a lot of table real estate that they've got to have that they can take up.
It is. And once you start getting to the higher numbers of the Scattergunners, you've also got the problem is their sprays start getting in the way of each other.
Sure.
You don't get as much benefit out of them when you're at the 9 and the 10 as you do with that 6 to 8 range.
Now, if I remember right from my pre-Forsaking the Creel days, Scattergunners, their speed 6, is that right?
Yes, so they're a little bit
faster. That helps a lot with attacking the areas as well, because you don't have to worry about this low speed 5 deal.
And I think you know, we talked about underrated Warcasters and Warlocks. I think Scattergunners are an underrated unit.
Absolutely.
I played Mike one time, and he was playing Horlock with Scattergunners, and he put Fortune on them. And I had a bunch of Blighted Swordsmen up on a hill, and he killed 8 of them one turn. And he didn't need Fortune once.
That plus two to hit from the Fellcaller just makes them
didn't
nasty.
Have it.
Mm-hmm. Didn't even have the plus two.
He rolled really well.
Oh, well, that doesn't say anything about the Scattergun.
I'm saying he didn't need the plus two, and he didn't need Fortune, both of which he did have.
Okay.
Oh, they were on them, you're saying?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I'm just saying, you know, with those two stacked on top of them, I mean, they can just clear out even the high defense models. Mm-hmm. And a POW 12 spray is respectable.
Right. Well, like I was saying, there's speed 6, so that's giving you a 14-inch spray, range on the spray, effectively.
Yeah, that helps a lot, too. That extra inch of movement.
That's huge.
It really is. I mean, I don't know how many times the Creel Warriors, when I'm playing them, I get that extra movement out of them because you can get so much further up the field. Back to the list. We've got the Horlock, Earthborn, Axer, Bouncer, Felcaller, Creelstone Bearers. The list has it up to five. When I got it all done, I managed to get another one in, get that ore just a little bit bigger. Champions, they're silly
good. It's a troll list.
They're silly good. Why wouldn't you have a unit of champions? I mean, there's very few instances where you're not going to have a
use. This segment is for you.
Yeah, not have a unit of champions in there. And for the record, I own three units. When I play 1,000-point games, I've run three before.
That's only, what, 318 points?
Mm-hmm.
That is a damn good use of 308 points. Yeah,
I know.
I know I've played one game against you with trolls, and I faced – you had two units of champions in there. And I remember it. They were nasty. So, yeah, champions are a very good unit.
And it's gotten to the point where they're so good, I feel bad about taking the two units in 750 or below unless I'm playing – just someone that I know's can handle them.
This is kind of a problem that Privateer Press kind of has in one regard, is if you put out a model or unit that's too good, people won't as much buy the stuff that comes after it. Now, I know you bought a bunch of Creel Warriors as well because of your AK-47 list.
Yes.
But which is 47 Trollblood models on medium bases, which is
an AK points. Comes from Esling Kiel.
Yeah, right. Yeah. But, you know, I can imagine a lot of people aren't going to pick up Creel Warriors or Scattergunners because they have champions.
Well, and all that is very expensive.
Yeah. This is true.
Trolls are very expensive to begin with.
That's true.
And that was one of the good things. Their marketing ploy with the Trollblood release was really effective. They released the Scattergunners first.
The champions last?
The champions weren't last. They did come out before the Creel Warriors. But I bet at least half the people wouldn't have picked up Scattergunners if they had champions
first. Yeah, probably. Good point.
And I probably wouldn't have picked up a full unit, I can tell you that. Yeah. I probably would have stuck to the 8-man unit and just left it at that. And it has a 5-man unit of the Buffalo, the Long Riders.
Because, you know, what's worse than champions? Champions
on
Buffalo.
I was about to say, oh, you didn't have the second unit of champions. Oh, what did you replace them with?
Well, for a while there, I had two units of champions and a unit of Buffalo.
Oh, okay.
And
thank you for toning it down, James.
Yeah, you're welcome.
This is the guy who complained about, you know, the two Angeliuses in the list.
And it also has Pendrake in it for the, I think.
Dismember.
Dismember. Thank you. I couldn't think of the name of the ability.
Well, Dismember is an additional diet, right? It's not a boost.
Exactly.
It's a charge.
Yeah.
It's going to hurt.
But even with the Creel Warriors, because some of my lists aren't quite this bad as far as having champions and long riders and everything else. Because I have found, now that I own them, once you get over the hump of actually buying them,
right.
The Creel Warriors with their unit attachments and the Caber Thrower, it's a nasty unit. It's fun to run.
Mm-hmm.
That with the Felcaller in it, adding in all his benefits to hit or to stand them up, they can really get nasty. And the simple fact that if they can see their standard,
right.
They're not knocked down.
And they can see through each other too, right?
Yeah, they see through medium-based friendly models to see it.
Right.
So now isn't even just the Creel Warrior.
And
units.
Considering you can space them out so much with the standard, or is it the standard or the,
yeah,
one of the
the Piper from the standard unit lets them have cow formation. Basically.
So they can see clear across their army. As long as there's not a dire troll in the way, they can see the standard feet away.
Or an enemy model.
Right.
That's medium based.
Sure.
Or bigger. But yeah, they get really fun. And with Pendrake, with a full unit of those, 13 of those models out there, you put Dismember on them and they charge in, that's going to be nasty because you can spread the pain throughout an entire spread out Legion army if you really want to. Because with the +2 to hit, even the Legion defense is possible.
Yep. It's good, but it's not great.
Now, you were asking me how to use it.
Yep.
Basically, you've got a core of your army, which is Doomshaper and the Beast. The Earthborn needs to stay in his control area, but with Doomshaper, at least with the 7 Fury, he has a 14-inch.
Mm-hmm.
So I tend to keep him close, but you can range him out because he'll steal the POW of a weapon of whoever he's within an inch of. So you can use him to really tear through a jack, or if someone's silly enough to let him get hold of a Warcaster or Warlock. If he's got Fortune on him and he's hidden in there, it's just fun.
So out of the POWs of your weapons here, is there anything that you routinely take that you steal, so to speak, with the Earthborn? Or do you rely on enemy models for that?
Normally, I rely on enemy models. There's not a whole lot of PAL in this list, if I remember right.
You'd have to position them right anyway, because they have to be within an inch. So.
Exactly. The Axer's axe might be a little bit higher than his base one. I think his PAL is only a 3, though.
It's one less than the Dire Troll, I think.
Right, so, yeah. I think the Dire Troll is a 4.
I think so.
So, as you get going. Now, you might be wondering why I don't have another Dire Troll in the list. It's a lot of points, and it's a great model, and sometimes you might want to swap him out for a Dire Troll. But
you could take out those Long Riders.
I could.
You'd have points left over if you did that.
Yeah, I would, but then that's not nearly as much fun.
Do you, talking about leaving out another two-handed throw in there, or two-fisted beast, do you use the two-handed throw much?
Yes. That's the one thing I regret, having the Axer and the Bouncer, neither of them. I like the Pyre Troll and the Winter Troll, and now the Slag Troll. Because they have the two-fist, even they can chuck my medium-based models.
True.
And I use it as much for throwing my own stuff to get things knocked down by using my own guys as missiles as anything. So I do miss that a little bit, but I still have the Earthborn, so I can still throw a large base model. I can still throw my little guys. I can still use the missiles. And he tends to be more of a mid-range beast instead of up in the front. That's usually the front line tends to be the champions and the Long Riders. They're the ones up there to either claim the points, to get across the line, or to get far enough across the line and to tie up the other army if I'm trying to hold the line. Keep them out of the thing, keep them across the line. Mm-hmm. That's usually what they're used for. Because there's been several times when, in like mosh pit, I get past the mosh pit and keep going and slam into the other army, and then they're just out there to die. To sit there, get in the way with their reach weapons and die. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to take the mosh pit. I mean, it doesn't always work. Some things get through, but as long as they can keep a portion of their army back that would normally be in that mosh pit, that seems like a benefit to me.
Sure.
And again, with them in the list, if I'm playing, I know now it's 1,000 points or more to have the two section steamroller event. But before, you could send them out to claim one of those or to at least contest one of them. Because I know War Machine Weekend last year, we had started using it and it had not put in that stipulation where it had to be 1,000 points where you'd have the two locks.
I think even now it's just a suggestion. So even it might be some rogue event that actually has it with less than 1,000 points.
So you still have that benefit of them in there. And the simple fact is they're hard to slam. So if someone tries to slam them, they have -3, and if they don't move them at least 4, they don't do anything. Mm-hmm. They just sit there.
Yep.
You've also got the fact that if I wanted to, I could do their slam order. I mean, how often do you really want to do that with the impact attacks and the benefits they get from the cav charge itself?
Well, I mean, they're going to – on that slam, there are so many penalties to doing it. Number one, there's no reach. You have to go directly at the model.
Right.
Number two, you don't get the +2 to the cav attack roll.
Exactly.
Number three, you're at -2 because you're slamming.
Exactly.
I mean, they're aim at 4.
You have – if you're going to do that order, you almost have to use your fail call for it. I mean, that's a given.
Yeah.
Or give them guided hand or something.
Yes.
They need something.
You know,
something
fortune to help will them help them out, but still it's a – Matt, 4,
yep.
That's pretty bad.
Well, the fell caller's +2 to hit. That's what I was thinking of.
Yes. Yeah, to give him a 6.
Are you going
to
have the fell caller that far forward? I mean, he has to be within 6.
And that's the problem.
That means he has to start within a foot.
That's the problem. Usually I'm using them as they're their own entity. They're out there to cause problems, to flank, to get up there and tie things up. Mm-hmm. They're there as a first wave out.
Right.
Or to come in from the side. The champions do what champions do. They march right up the middle. They're a solid troll brick that's there. I usually keep them at the front end of my Creel Stone range, which means they do have the problem of if you can start making that shield go down by taking out some of the scribes, it's going to hurt. But they're walking up there. They're protecting my guys behind them, and they're going up there to take the point, to get into the control zones, whatever needs to be done. And then you've got everything else falling up behind them. I don't know where Pendrick's going to be right now, but I'm guessing he's going to be in between them and the Horlock crew.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so Josh, I'll start with you this time. Playing Circle, how much do you like facing the troll brick?
I don't like facing trolls too much at all. You know, I was actually geared up to talk about Cricks here, and you asked me about Circle. Throw me a curveball here.
Well, you got to keep you on your toes.
Yeah, that's true. Well, Circle in general has a tough time getting through high armor things.
This is true.
As a general rule, obviously we have things like, say, Tharn Ravagers. They can put a pretty big punch on a charge. And with our own Pendrake,
right,
if we can sneak in there, taking out your beasts would probably be a little problem.
Right.
I think part of your problem is going to be the scattergunners.
Probably, because we can hide in the woods all we want, but that's not going to matter to their sprays.
Right.
As long as they have line of sight to you, yeah.
Sure, sure.
And it only goes in 3 inches.
It only goes in 3 inches, but typically the force we have, you know, might be 5 inches. You're still going to pick guys off.
Right.
That doesn't mean that we can't use our stealth, though. Let's say I use my Epikaya 12 Argus list or something. I can give a little bit of stealth out there. We do have the Lord of the Feast, but you'll never see him anyway.
He might actually hit something in this list.
That's entirely true, actually. But the thing is, he has to kill stuff to really do something.
Yeah.
And he can get off a couple good swings, but after that, he'll be trashed the next turn.
Can Pendrake give him dismember?
I believe so. I think he gives it to model unit, I believe.
There you go. You bird yourself in. You take out one of those beasts.
Yeah.
That could be nasty.
That's true. That actually wouldn't be too much.
The bouncer's a low defense.
It is. And, you know, actually putting him in there.
I think it's 10.
Even just as a speed bump. Yeah. So, I don't know. I think the Lord of the Feast might be a little bit too expensive to go up against this, but I can see how he might have this place, maybe. Let's see. You don't really have anything in here except for the Fell Caller that allows you to ignore rough terrain.
It doesn't work on beasts.
The Axe are, well, it's true, but in a large sense, the Axe are certainly Rush. Is that what it's called?
Right.
Rush
and can certainly get that's usually what I throw on the Earthborn the turn he's really going to get in
right.
there.
So if I ended up taking a couple World Wardens, I could throw out some prevent your charges by throwing out some undergrowths.
Right.
But still, that's not going to help too much. Because you're going to get in there. If I end up doing that as a defensive mechanism, that might mean that I'm just backing up every turn, preventing your charges again and again, possibly holding it off until I can get something harder in there, like maybe some Tharn Ravagers.
And even with the new Steamroller format, I was getting more turns. If you're sitting there backing up,
sure.
I'm winning.
Yeah. So I guess in general, I wouldn't do that, which is not good for the Circle player. I don't know, I've always had a problem playing against trolls with Circle. It's just getting through that tough armor. And I'm not even talking about the Creelstone boosted armor, just the regular 18s and 17s out there.
I think Kruger's Feet could be a little bit handy.
It might
be. One of them can take out the Scattergunners, maybe two of them, and you can place one of them because everything is bricked up. You can get Horluck. You can get one of the lights, maybe two of the lights. You could maybe even get a Dire Troll because they're going to be all tied together with one template. Now, granted, Horluck controls frenzies
on the
Dire Troll and could also direct one beast a game.
Right, with the squad.
But you've potentially got three turns of doing that if you keep making the template follow them.
Possibly. And even that's still only 3 3-inch templates, though. I mean, to hit on the first turn, to even hit a Scattergunner, I got to roll a 7. So if I were to catch, say, three of them in there, I might be taking out 2.
Yeah, that second turn when it lawnmowers over them, they're going to go.
That would, and of course, if you put it in front of them, you can direct their movement because they're not going to walk through it because they'll die.
Right.
Or if not, they'll be knocked down. I won't have to worry about them that turn anyway.
And the problem you're going to have with a lot of your casters, unless you take your Balder, you won't want to be. If I pop my feet and you're taking damage on all your things that are casting or spending,
mm-hmm.
that's going to whittle you down pretty quick.
Yeah. Actually, Balder wouldn't be too bad of a use here. Or even without Balder, I'm thinking about putting Forest out there, some Sentry Stones, throwing out just a couple Forests to get in your way. Even if you can charge over it. It won't do you any good if I'm blocking your line of sight completely by putting it completely in front of, say, your axe or whatever else.
That's true.
Of course, if you had Grim, that would be a different story. But with Doomshaper, he's still limited a lot by terrain.
Yes, he is.
One thing that's cool about Circle is we have a plethora of two-fisted beasts out there. And the troll defense, except for the Scattergunners, for example, on this list, typically isn't too incredibly high. And especially right. with a two-handed throw, since you're not penalized, you're going to be hitting a lot.
Right.
So there's lots of throwing things around here I can see just to knock things down, to let me creep up a little bit more and more, maybe get a little surgical strike in here and there, not worrying about you having to get up and then attack me, because if you're far away, that's not going to happen. You don't have too many models here. You're going to be flanking pretty heavily, I think you said, with the Scattergunners on one side.
Scattergunners usually run one side. The Long Riders usually run the other.
Oh, I was envisioning the Long Rider going right up the middle, I guess because you were talking about Mosh Pit.
Yeah.
But either way, you're going to have a gap on either a flank or in the middle.
Usually.
And so that would be the point of entry, I suppose, to get something heavy in there. But still, Circle doesn't have a whole lot that is incredibly heavy to get up there. Even if I took Ikaya, for example, you're only going to have a couple models extra to give her the pluses for against the odds. Gosh, I don't know.
And once you get in there, if he's sitting on that 23 armor...
Mm-hmm.
Earth Spike spam. Try and keep him knocked
down. In that case, you only need
easy to hit, but he keeps the armor.
You really only need to move the thing that's giving him the armor, though, right? If I can throw it away or push it away,
that's one
you're
of
not
going to
get the bonus.
Getting rid of the bouncer or whoever's in base-to-base contact with them without putting one of your good armored models next to me. Because
it has to be in base-to-base, though, right?
It has to be in base-to-base, which you can do, but I've had a couple of opponents that didn't realize that. They get up there, they put them in base-to-base, and the next thing you know is, oh, look, you killed the bouncer, but now I've got your armor.
Right. So there are a couple things to do that would work well against this, but they're going to be difficult to do no matter what, I think. Boy, that was a pretty vague statement,
wasn't it? I think you need yourself some Gatormans.
You know, Gatormans wouldn't work or would work very well because you've got all these multi-wound models, and their Blood Frenzy or whatever that ability is called will really help rip these guys up pretty quickly.
Gatormen do really well against most
Even some Bog Trogs come in from the side to whittle away a little bit at, say, your Bouncer or your Earthborn.
Or the Bog Trog come in and take out Scare Gunners.
That's entirely possible, too, because on the Tyrant they come in, they'd be, what, an 8?
Yes.
On Matt, is that right? Or yeah. 8 or 7?
Bog Trogs are extremely good against lists like this, because I still don't have a lot of models you can still flank behind and come up from behind. Mm-hmm. That's...
So yeah, bog minions would work well against this, I think, for pretty much any Horde's army that's going up against it.
But lately, most Horde's armies take very little minions. Bog Trogs are starting to get more popular.
Right.
But Gatormen, recently, I haven't seen a whole lot of Gatormen.
Yeah, I don't know why they fell out of favor.
Awesome. They're great.
Well, in the troll list, I've got so much other faction stuff that benefits from my synergy.
Well, yeah,
why
you can't,
take the
you can't boost them too much anyway. If you've got, well, Fortune is what? Troll only, right?
Yeah.
Same thing with Madrix, Guided Hand, and so on. So actually, it's a lot like Circle in the sense that the things that you're boosting are going to be, you have to be in faction. So you have to rely on the minions to do their own thing by themselves. Right. But against this list, I don't think the minions would have too much trouble whittling away.
They wouldn't. And if you built your list specifically to take this list on, you're going to have those in, though.
Sure.
If you're talking about a Steamroller list, how many times... I will see Bog Trogs because I run Bog Trogs myself in Steamroller. Mm-hmm. But other than Bog Trogs, you don't see a whole lot of minions as far as like the units.
True.
Well, like Bone Grinders, but not as far as offensive units.
You're right.
Well, there aren't too many. Right. Yeah, as opposed to other than the Gatormen and the Bog Trogs, all we have are the Feral Brigands.
Yeah.
And I've seen them once on the table.
That's one more than I've seen them.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, as far as Legion goes, I actually played against this list in the Rampage. And there was one catch. That was the scenario where if you were going to try and run, you had to make a command check. And if you failed, your unit lost its activation.
Yeah.
And the Scattergunners stayed in deployment zone for 3 turns.
Yeah, I remember that.
So that was a flank that I could actually get to.
Yeah.
So that was the best example of trying to fight this list. But I did exactly what you mentioned. I actually slammed the... bouncer over and away from Horluck and then got to him.
Oh, isn't the bouncer a medium?
It's medium. He didn't go over. He slammed him away.
Just away. Okay.
Or was it, maybe it was the Earthborn I slammed. Which one did I hit? It doesn't matter. I slammed one of the beasts and I broke the connection.
Right.
And with Saren's feet, a bunch of beasts went in, engaged everything, kind of tied him in place, and over 2 turns killed Horluck.
Right.
But that's the thing. I can't take the time to go through the Long Riders and the Champions and the Scattergunners. I got to try and make a hole and go for it. So things like the Angelius is going to do really good.
Mm-hmm.
Kill the thing that Horluck is stealing its armor if you have to.
As far as that goes, Legion, with all the wings and all the ways around the different things that I've got out there, has the most advantages. And the Angelus itself is just the bane of my trolls. I mean, you see that out there, that is... target number one.
Speaking of which, I'm just glad that they reworded Metamorphosis to say that you replace your caster's base armor with what you've stolen.
Right.
Because before, the way it was worded, you basically couldn't half it.
Right. Because you half the base armor, then he stealed the armor, and it stolen the armor, then it was back up to 23.
Right.
But it was reworded so that you replace his base armor with whoever you're stealing from.
Which makes sense. And
sure, yeah. Yeah, I mean, as happy as I am as it gives me a better chance against them, it was a more logical wording.
Right. So, but yeah, you've got the best ways to get around it.
I think I set my Raptors again on the Scattergunner flank. They can either charge in and kill them or shoot them with their bow. You know, if they stand still, they get 2 shots, but they're going to get sprayed on. Mm-hmm. And if they get sprayed on, they're probably going
to
die.
Yeah, because if I spray on them, they're hard to hit, but I've got the... most likely have the plus two from the fell collar and fortune up. Mm-hmm. If I hit them, they're so squishy. The scattergunner things only what their armor 14 or
15.
It's your power 12 on their 15. Yeah.
So,
yeah.
So two hits will kill them.
But I mean, it's kind of interesting that, you know, you're kind of spread out and then I'm trying to overextend myself to go at the heart of your army.
Right.
I've got to stop you from coming around flanking my Warcaster or Warlock as well. And that's where Incubi come in. You need a swordsman, some Incubi, just to stall some charges and get in the way of the Long Riders, keep them from charging my Warcaster, mm-hmm. or Warlock, sorry. You know, that's, I've got to stall you while I work my way through your armor. You know, some Blighted Archers, Concentrate Volley with the mini feet.
Poison. Lots of poison would hurt this.
Yeah, poison does hurt.
Yeah.
With the multi-wound models, you hit me with poison.
I could see Epic Lilith giving them 50 gazillion poisoned arrow shots. Mm-hmm. Being a little bit of fun.
Do the archers ignore screening?
They have arcing fire if they have the unit attachment.
But arcing fire doesn't ignore screening.
It ignores everything that doesn't screen the model.
Yeah. So, well, I mean, yeah, they wouldn't be shooting Horlock, though. I mean, you might have a couple shooting right. Horlock. They'd take out, like, all the champions if they could.
In my list, though, it's Horlock that I'm more worried about.
Oh,
he's,
sure.
He's the weak link that it, once you get to him, if any of my defenses for him falter, it's gone. The game's over. It really is.
What about Scorn?
With Scorn, the way you get around
my brick and your brick, and they meet up, and then
Walker actually came up with the idea that works. He had the Arcurii. He drugged the beast away from Horlock.
That's funny.
I mean,
oops,
drugged the beast away, and I saw it coming. I knew he could do it. Yep. It was a case where you're hoping your opponent doesn't think of it first.
So you're saying if I get my Reaper up there, I might be able to use it?
Yes. Wow. You could use your Reaper for once.
Wow.
What's a Reaper?
It's this weird jack. That's mythical Crix jack that you never see.
Oh, wait. That's the one with the 5-inch or the 5-foot spike on it that doesn't have reach, right?
Yes, that's correct. Yes.
Or your ogres.
The black ogres, yeah.
They can pull things in, too.
They'd do it easily if they could get up there because they have CRA.
So. Right. So, yeah. That's one of the main things because it's all about breaking the chain that protects Horlock. Mm-hmm. Once you break that chain, he's just sitting there with a 13 defense and I think 15 armor, 14 armor. 14 it's or 15 awful. Which is one of the reasons why I tried him so early on to play him right and left and just could not make him work because anytime anything got to him, he died.
So you think he really came around into his own whenever the Earthborn came around?
Yes, when all the stuff from Evolution came out to help him be a good lock, that's why I'm saying that at the smaller point games, he doesn't work as well, because to put in everything that makes him work, because his spell list is great. We keep talking about Fortune, but he's got Disillusion. He's got the one where he can possibly make you give up an activation.
Mm-hmm.
Accursed, I believe.
That's right. Vexation, even.
Vexation. There's all kinds. His spell list is really a nice spell list. It works really well, and it's got a range that...
Well, the spells are pretty short range, aren't they?
One of them is his entire control radius.
One of them is
Disillusion.
Disillusion's his entire control area, and that gets rid of all enemy upkeep spells, and it hurts either the people it's on by making them take a command check and having to sacrifice something, or... if it's on a war beast, it can cause them to take some damage.
I think that the troll brick versus the scorn brick could be a little bit of an interesting match. You know, the trolls have their higher armor. The scorn have their ancestral guardians.
The ancestral guardians are evil.
Three
the
of those
just impact away anything that's a little too close. They push back, push back, push back.
Yeah,
the Venators and one of the drakes. One of the basilisks.
Drake's animus could push some stuff around. I think that'd be a very bloody game.
It would. It usually is.
That'd be one of the interesting games which Xerxes could actually be fun.
That's true.
Just, you know, the scorn brick hopping through itself and trying to whittle its way through. You know, you've got the Ferroxes, which can leap, and which is huge. You know, they get up to the champions, they leap, and oh, look, they're engaged with Horlock. Better hope they can't kill the Axer the Bouncer.
But for the record, knowing that they're there, they're going to be back just a little bit further.
Yeah. Oh, there's always counters, but it's another tool that the scorn player has.
The leaf is definitely going to help them be able to get around things and over stuff, and that's the key. You got to get around my thing, get to the squishy center of my army.
Like, for example, Epic Morgul, who feats and game over.
Yeah, Epic Morgul is going to be nasty. He really is.
All right, well, Josh, you were all anxious to talk about Crix earlier, so why don't you go ahead and do that real quick.
The only thing that I see in this list that can really counter a knockdown is the Fellcaller with Reveille. Right. You know, usually you worry about Madrak with Surefoot, but here it's no big deal. If you can kill the Fellcaller, then let's say Denegra, Scourge, and knock down, and then you can go up and spell him to death over a couple of turns, maybe.
Right.
This is, of course, assuming you can get his armor down.
And the key, one key you might want to think about, though, is don't kill him. You kill the Bouncer and you kill the Axer, and I've got no one to steal armor from.
That's true, yeah.
And once that's gone, it doesn't take a couple of turns to get rid of Horlock. It takes one good hit.
Right. And so he doesn't really have much defense against magic. So I'd probably just magic him to death. Because even with Terminus, he's a pretty hard-hitting guy. He'll have a hard time getting soul tokens with this army because he just has to try so much just to kill one thing.
Right.
So, although his feet would help giving you no orders.
Mm-hmm.
So that's
well, something. You could gimp hand that Axer right away.
It could, the yeah. There's, I love Terminus because he's got lots of throwing shenanigans going on out there.
Yeah.
Throwing everything in sight. But yeah, lots of spells. Go figure. With Krix is probably how I would go with it.
Mm-hmm.
What about Signar?
Let's see. And think about this list as you guys are talking about, especially considering you know getting that armor down. I think Siege would probably be a good candidate for this one, just because I could use Shockwave to knock the things away from base to base to try to get that armor down.
Right.
And then of course his feet is going to allow at least you know one half armor shot on Horlock itself. So if I can get that armor down and then take that one shot there, something maybe say a defender or something like that, that could do it. Also, gun mages would be good because they can knock things away as well.
Mm-hmm.
Again, throw in the things like have trenches in there, have them up front. They're going to be like a speed bump to keep your army back from me. I like my cavalry, the Storm Lances. They're going to be faster, so they can maybe counteract some of your things that are come up faster, like your long riders, because right. Those are going to be problematic for me. Just because they're all over the board and they're faster. So put things out like that. But I'm like Dave said, I think what I've got to do is I've got to sort of distract you. I've got to keep your army at bay, and then I've got to go for the underbelly. And I think that's probably a way to do it. Maybe even like, I don't know if I would do this, but maybe, you know, some long gunners just to shoot from a distance, but I'd rather do it with 20. So that, you know, Kane or Striker would be better at that because at mm-hmm. least I'd be able to shoot you at 20, but right. I don't know if those are as good an option. So that's just my quick thoughts as to what to do.
What about the Protectorate?
Well, neither Metamorphosis nor the Creel Stone really helps during your maintenance phase, so setting Horlock on fire is always a good option.
The Creel Stone, yes. Yeah, right, because you have to pop it in order to get the
yeah.
So fire hurts a lot.
Yeah, and fire will it'd be pretty decent against the entire army because you know the Creel Stone's not up at that time.
Right.
So something like Zealots, Cleanser Bombs. Temple Flame Guard with the unit attachment. They can't get to the back, but they'll be able to light the front up. And they're a good stopping brick.
Mm-hmm.
I like my Cav. They got a good charge range. They hit pretty hard, especially if you hurt them first. And they can pathfind, so they can probably get to some of the crunchier middles.
Yes.
I think the Fire Salvation would be pretty fun.
Where's that?
Well, the auto-boosted attack and damage rolls, and the fact that if it kills something, they can attack something else. Granted, Tough messes with that a little bit, but yeah, just give it a couple extra focus to continue the chain.
Yeah, Tough's only 5 or 6.
Yeah, I mean, it'll eventually get the job done.
We should point out James has a pretty good record with his Tough rolls. Oh, I think some
this
of it
is true.
I think it's just urban legend, but people say that he has this mysterious power.
I've tracked games, sitting there watching the whole game, and it comes out to be about right. Now, there are some of those games against people that I've had that literally they needed to kill this model.
Uh-huh.
That model's made 8 tough rolls.
Yeah.
But the rest of my army's sitting there dying around me.
Sure.
Let's see, what else can I bring this? Well, you know, got a lot of weapon masters
mm-hmm.
that can, you know, hit pretty hard.
I can see your errants blocking his front line.
Yeah.
Because they kill one, just kill the guy in back, and that line still hasn't moved.
Most of his stuff is going to have multiple attacks. So instead, I'd stagger my errants and let him kill the front ones, because mm-hmm. then he couldn't take his second attack and kill another guy.
There you go.
But yeah, just like the trenchers, putting him up there in the face to slow him down.
Mm-hmm.
Idrian's praying something can hurt a lot.
But I'm learning some tricks to get around that. Once they're engaged, they're not nearly as main.
I think cleansers would be fun to put against a scattergunner, just a little spray off. Plus mine explode.
It's true.
Mention zealots. The bouncer's a low enough defense that my redeemer might actually be able to hit it.
True.
You see any fun stuff with the daughters here just running through his army?
They're too low, pal.
Think so?
I mean, if they did their little assassin CRA thing or CMA thing on Horlick, you know, they could do a couple auto points of damage regardless of his armor. Mm-hmm. Then they'd all die the next turn. So it might be a fair trade to get 5 points of damage on him, but he'll probably have enough time to heal it before I can get to him again.
True.
So, you know, yes and no. I mean, it'd be... They could do it, but I don't think it would be effective enough.
What about Blazing Aura? I know you love to put Blazing Aura on them. You think that would have any place here?
Depends what he would use to kill them. It actually probably wouldn't be too bad because most of the stuff is high enough POW plus strength that the reflection damage is going to hurt, especially if like the Earthborn's hitting him and stuff. But if he puts up the Creel Stone first, he's really going to mitigate that. Mm-hmm.
And you also got to remember, I have Disillusion. If he's got that up, I'm going to move Doomshaper close enough. I'm going to Disillusion that because I know how bad that is to try and hit.
That's usually if I have Revenge or if I have Vengers, it usually goes on them. Because the plus two armor that they get counters the minus two armor, and still a good time is reflecting damage with them. Let's see. You know, regular Severius could kind of play the no spells game with you that you're going to play with them for a turn. But he's frail, and even your Scattergunners could take him down. I don't know. I think it's going to be kind of like we were talking about with the Cold Shoulder list. The Protector just has to get through the front line and get to the Chewy inside. And if the Long Riders and Scattergunners are out on separate flanks, that leaves only the champions between the Beasts and the Protectorate, which they can get through with some good rolls.
Right.
So that requires tying up that other stuff. Doable, but difficult.
And then if you're playing against me with your Protectorate, with me knowing what Protectorate can do, half the things that they're going to be closer in, there's not going to be as many openings. But again, that's us playing each other. So.
Right, yeah. It's a whole different ballgame when you know exactly what your opponent's going to do before the game starts. What else is there anything else I can mention for the Protectorate? Well, the Protectorate can field Alton nationally. That's something.
And Alton is usually a very high target in my list.
Absolutely. Because he'll shoot right over those champions to hit the large-based beasts.
Mm-hmm. The large-based beast.
Well, yeah, there's only one.
That's also one good reason why I only have one large-based beast in the list. Because every circle opponent's going to have Alton if you know you're going to be playing hordes all day.
Right. But, yeah, I think the Bastions will do pretty decent when they come out.
I'm looking forward to them.
So, but, you know, that's just speculation at this point. You know, either Fiora, like I said, setting Horlock on fire will work. Kraos knocking your army down just to slow it.
Right.
If you can kill the Fellcaller.
Right.
Nothing else is jumping out at me as being awesome.
So who's going to do Kador?
Oh, you got Kador, so yeah.
Well, there you go. The things with Kador is they can get around armor so easy. You've got the Widowmakers, that's 4 points a turn. You've got Eris, that's 3 points a turn.
Assuming they get, I mean, if it's screened by the bouncer, though, he's going to have a high defense.
Eris, doesn't she ignore screen?
She doesn't have crack shot.
Nope.
She doesn't have crack shot.
Okay. Alton does, but Alton does. Eris doesn't.
The biggest annoyance the Kador has is those KZ assassins with the underboss.
Yep.
They get around any troll warlock and circle him, and they just do, oh, I hit you, you take 4 points of damage.
They're
oh,
like
I hit
daughters
you, you take
crack.
4 points of damage. Mm-hmm. And if they've got the underboss there, you get them in melee, which most of this list obviously is melee oriented, and you've got the scatter gunners, but they're running up a flank. You can't hit them.
You've got fortune, but it's still going to be hard.
Right.
You still have to roll that high. It doesn't give you any pluses. It gives you a second chance.
The few times I've had to play Kador running the KZ Assassins, they have been the bane of my list with trolls.
I'll bet.
So, as far as things that I know off the top of my head. Then you've always got Sorsha freezing you. You're stationary.
Epic Vlad's feet.
You've got the Grey Lords getting three of them in there, and they freeze you if they can get three hits on you.
Irisk's inhospitable ground is going to slow you down very, very much.
It can, yes. That's one of the reasons why the Axer's in there instead of some of the other beasts that could be in there.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, go ahead.
because I really do like the Winter Troll, because that whole, if you're within so much of you Animus, you're stationary, that's real fun to throw on a champion when you send it up in the middle.
Yeah. Who else does Kador have? The Butcher. That'd be a big beat stick fight.
Yeah, if the Butcher gets up there, I mean, the Butcher is slow enough, though, and you can try and work at him from different directions. That's the main benefit. But he has the charge, Boundless Charge, too, doesn't he?
Epic does. Regular does not.
Okay. Couldn't remember.
Yeah.
The Kador Jacks are extremely easy to hit, and most of my guys, while they don't start out tough, when you got champions, as far as how much power they can put out, they're going to start doing some damage.
Yeah.
I hate to say it. I'd take Epic Gorshade against this list.
Why?
Oh, my God.
Because I could actually hit his stuff with the Bane Thralls.
Good reason.
I wouldn't kill it, so I'd probably lose the Bane, but getting that charge off first would be kind of funny.
So you found a use for him.
And then whenever I get up there and try to make you stationary, but fail anyway, your armor or your... And I remember that's not going to matter because I can still, your armor's still high. Never mind. I'm just trying to make Gorshade work, Epic Gorshade work, and it's just not happening.
If I'm stationary, though, I can't cast Animuses, right?
No.
You still cast spells if you're stationary?
You've got to destroy a model to make you stationary.
Okay.
Right.
Never mind.
Yeah, Epic Gorshade just sucks. Although, I know what I was going to say. He has the spell where he can move things. He has his own version of telekinesis.
Abyssal Gate.
Yes.
It's a damage and not kill.
It is damage. So if I can damage, say, the Earthborn, I can move them away or whatever. But
the Earthborn's only going to be armor 21.
Yeah, it's a pal. I'd have to boost the damage, but it's like a pal 13 or something like that.
So you got a decent chance of doing that 1 point of damage you need to move him.
Yeah.
I think that's about it.
Yep. If anybody out there is interested in contacting us, you can reach us at contact@ironagenda.com, or you can ring us up and give us a voicemail at
206-333-0983.
And somebody will get back to you, or we'll play on the air, or something crazy will happen.
Yeah, you could tell us maybe how you face Horluck or how you play Horluck.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you can give us a good reason to make Epic Gorshade work against them, sure, why not? We'd be interested in hearing that, too.
And also check out our forums on ironagenda.com and, you know, just go on there and post some ideas, post your responses to the episode or questions or comments that you might have. Mm-hmm.
Well, is that it, everybody?
I think so. So, James, thanks for joining us this week.
Well, thank you for having me here. Appreciate it.
And we'll probably see you again sometime.
If you still want me back.
If you'll come back.
We'll have to talk about it.
Okay.
Yeah. Bye, everybody.
See you next time.
See ya.
All right, I'm out of here. Iron Agenda is copyright 2008 by its hosts and released under the Creative Commons Attribution No Derivative Works 3.0 United States license, with opening and closing music provided courtesy of Joshua Salter.